Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's second Friday food, wine, and travel show with the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association. They totally rock. They're made up of travel writers, photographers, authors, destinations, hotels, wineries, you name it. And every second Friday, and actually also every second Tuesday, we get to interview people in that field. So when it comes to travel writers and photographers, we get to get the scoop on where they've been, what they've been photographing, what are they writing about, and it's just so awesome. And today, we're excited to welcome Kathleen Messmer. Now, Kathleen was born in Germany, raised in the States, daughter of two military parents, so she's very strict. Right, yeah, she's on time. She is on time. And well, no, you're on time. She's a photographer, a filmmaker, a writer, and really, go to her website. She's got two. One is indiespirit.live. Who doesn't like that? The independent spirit. That's what it's about.
Yes.
And also keep up with her art, her fine art photography. Go to her website. It's KathleenMessmer.com. And that's Kathleen, K-A-T-H-L-E-E-N. See, I can spell. But also her last name, so you know, is M-E-S-S-M-E-R. So KathleenMessmer.com. But welcome to the show, Kathleen. How are you?
Thanks. I'm great. It's kind of cool being over here with you guys, you know?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Where are you, by the way? Yeah.
I'm in Albuquerque. I'm a California gal, really. I grew up in Washington State, but I lived in California for over 30 years and came out here for work, and then the work went away. That's when I started focusing on my photography full time.
Well, Albuquerque, we were just in Albuquerque this spring. We've been there twice. And if I'd known, I think we did try to meet up, didn't we? I think we did.
I saw you were here because you asked about my Sandia Cave picture.
Yeah.
That was interesting because a friend of mine, a photography friend of mine, we're always wanting to find wild horses, right? So we went up to Placidas, which is just north of Albuquerque, and couldn't find a horse to save our lives. So we just kept driving and ended up in finding this cave. It was kind of cool.
We were up in the Sandia Mountains doing a pet sit, because that's part of how we travel and do our work is pet sit across the country. And you have good internet, so we can do a conversation with you. And then we do our bed and breakfast hotels and vacation destinations and everything. Mm-hmm. And parks. I mean, that's why we travel full time, is documenting parks and public lands. But Sandia Mountains, we were up in the mountains. I mean, backed into it in the forest. Yes. And wow. And Albuquerque is, I got to say, one of my favorite cities we visited. Mm-hmm. You know, we always hear Santa Fe. I love Santa Fe. I love Silver City. And I love, I don't know, New Mexico just rocks. Because I can't pick one over the other.
They're well, when you come next, you should go to Tent Rocks and to the Vista Bylands.
I've been wanting to do that for years.
Oh, and Chaco.
We've done Chaco. Yes, and we interview artists from there all the time. Artists that do the National Parks Arts Foundation have an artist in residency. You should apply to go stay there for a month as an artist in residence. And travel writers, you are welcome to this program. I keep telling people you can go stay in Hawaii Volcanoes National Park for a month, Dry Tortugas. You have your own off the grid island. I'm not kidding. It's pretty darn cool. But that's the kind of thing these organizations, like being a member of the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association, everybody, it's IFWTWA.org. We call them IFTWA. It's really easier to say, but they're awesome. When did you join?
I believe it was 2019, could have been 2018. It wasn't long after I started travel writing. So, you know, I kind of do the Great Escape Publishing thing, you know, the workshop, and then you move on to travel writing, and then you find all these other organizations that you can join and expand your repertoire and network with other people and find out how to go to IMM without freaking out.
See, kind of so what's, I tell everybody what that's about.
International Media Marketplace is where you meet with CVBs and DMOs and try to arrange travel to their destination in exchange for writing and photography and videography and, you know, that type of thing, social media. And, you know, grow your social media network in the process. So it's pretty cool. You know, it's nerve-wracking because it's only 2 days and you have 24 appointments in 2 days. But, you know, that
we need wine after that.
Yes,
exactly.
Or margaritas exactly. If you're in New Mexico.
Margaritas too. Have you been on the Margarita Trail?
Yes.
Yes.
Of course.
We did a very good job too.
Yes. 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 Santa Fe does a good job of having a Margarita Trail. That's smart. But this is really cool that you're joining the organizations. Has it helped you in your, you know, development of what you're doing as this career? Because I know photography has been a mainstay, but, and you studied and, you know, worked at that, but now travel writing and going around, you've been all over the world. Has it helped you move forward?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I kind of dabbled in writing for like years, you know, on my photography blog and all that. But I never really wrote anything to be published except for an art magazine, which is, you know, was through the gallery that I was represented by. But I used to have a housemate who's a writer, a novelist. And he kept telling me, "You're a writer." And I'm going, "No, I'm not. I'm not a writer." And every time I publish an article, he goes, and "You're not a writer, right?" And I said, "No." So he's always giving me a hard time. And, you know, we banter back and forth like that. So I guess I am a writer. I have to admit it sooner or later, right?
Well, you make videos too. I was looking at the video you made of hotel and resort destinations in Temecula, California.
Yeah.
So you seem to have a good, we know Temecula, we used to live in Julian just up the road, and Temecula has got some good wine. And you had some fun out there.
Yeah, it was a really good trip, I have to say. I did the print article, then I did two videos, and I'm about to have another one through the Food, Wine, and Travel magazine.
Oh, good. Which is IFTWAS magazine, which is awesome.
Yeah, awesome. Right.
Quarterly. Yeah.
So it was really fun. They put me up at the Carter Estate Winery, and they don't just have hotel rooms. They have, what do they call it? Casitas.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice. And it looks, of course, right out on the vineyard.
Very
and you see
nice.
The balloons going by. And, you know, I mean, living in Albuquerque, you see that a lot too. But out there, it was different because it was California.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's different. It is different.
Yeah. And you know, the restaurants, oh my God, I never had so much good food in my life. And the people are always nice. And see, that's what was different for me. The people were really, really nice. Whereas other wine locations that I've experienced are kind of snooty.
Yeah. You know? And this is an important thing about wine and
it's
wine
changing
travel.
Though.
It's changing because I mean,
they've learned.
I've said this about the beer market, the craft breweries are all about fun and tasting, right?
Mm-hmm,
but they have this element of fun. And so they drew in women as well as males. Everybody used to go, beer is for boys. That's not true. I'm here and I've got a beer belly. I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
But just saying, but the wineries were like, oh, la-di-da. Well, you knocked out your market at that point.
Yeah.
And so they've really changed up.
Mm-hmm. They're learning.
We've been to wineries. Oh, you have the sawmill market in Albuquerque,
yes.
Which we love.
Yeah.
See, those places are fun. You're like, we'll have beer over here. This regional wine, regional food.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. But Temecula, I think it was almost like the underdog of Napa, and their wine is good. They're more relaxed. It's country. They've got in part of the why the food is so good. They've got great chefs, but all the local farms and very organic and very real. So I think it has to change because it's the same in the art world. That's what Nancy is always like. The more snooty you are, like
the more.
Yeah.
You still have to have your Sotheby's, right? And that's okay. Still you have to have the high end. And I don't think high end should mean snooty immediately.
No,
actually.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No,
it just doesn't, it puts people off. Yeah. And I'm one of those people that, in fact, I had a t-shirt I was going to wear today and I thought, oh, that's probably bad if they're recording, because it had a really sarcastic saying on it.
What does it say? Now I want to know. You should have worn it. We would have liked it.
It says, my people skills are fine. It's my low tolerance of idiot that needs work.
That's
so I decided not to wear that.
But I think that's funny.
That's funny.
I do too. And I, you know, and my son bought it for me. So I was like, okay, he gets me, you know.
But I think it is true about, you know, this welcoming is welcoming, because this is an interesting thing about travel. There's always, oh, if it's high end, oh, that automatically equates to your guest is got a lot of money. That's not always true. Like, it's not always what you think it is. And, you know, I know a lot of, you know, people that travel to high-end places, you can look at them and the way they dress. Like we were just talking before we hit the record button, Nancy and I travel in nurses' scrubs and our pants, because they're easy, lightweight to pack. We travel full time. We have one suitcase each. What are you going to put in it for, you know? So, and we travel through parks, and next thing you know, you're in a bed and breakfast, and it's
don't
like,
forget my silver lamé evening gown.
Oh yeah. Well, we each have a poncho that looks pretty la-di-da if we have to hide what we're wearing. But that's the truth. So you can't go by the clothing. You can't really, don't do it, because I know multimillionaires who dress in flip-flops and shorts because that's they really don't care. And if they walk into your winery that way, and you're snobby and they're not snobby, you ain't getting the money and they're not going to taste your wine. And that's that. The first impression actually is everything.
It really is.
It's not
is.
Always about clothes.
Yeah.
No.
And living in Albuquerque, you know, the Southwest is so relaxed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, even more so than California. California is pretty relaxed. At least the Bay Area is where I used to live. But, you know, Albuquerque has that beat hands down, you know? And so I went to the American Film Market in LA one year to try to promote a project we were doing. And the guy that one of my associate producers came with, and he said, what's the dress code? And I said, business casual. And he said, he showed up in a sleeveless denim vest and jeans and cowboy boots. And that was dressing up to him. So,
you know,
whatever.
But listen, I think you still want to represent yourself well, as best you can, right? That's kind of the thing too. And it is, you know, it is just a weird thing, but when you're traveling, give travelers a bit of slack, because half of the time you could lose your luggage if you're flying.
That happens.
You may be stuck in the same clothes for the next couple of days, depending on where you are. Yeah. You may have to wash them and hope they dry and get the hair dry. Listen, there needs to be a hair dryer in every hotel room just for this reason. If you wash your socks, you need to be able to put your socks on the end of the hair dryer.
Well, right? It's going, you know, away. The thing is, there needs
and
to
I don't
be
want wet panties. Not
the dry. Oh, it's hello. The worst.
Oh, wow. This has really gone downhill already.
No, but I have to say, hotels are kind of pulling back on their services, probably because of COVID, but not every hotel has hair dryers anymore like they
used to. We want them.
Right.
But all those extra things are sort of going bye-bye. I mean, now they're getting a little bit more bring your own.
Well, you know, I do travel with my own hair dryer because the hotel hair dryers are too wimpy. You know, they don't like your
hair, actually, you know? They suck up my hair and then they burn. And I'm sitting there with that little thing going, okay, sorry, I came out with a hole in my head. This is,
oh my God.
So,
oh my
how gosh. Many countries okay. have you been to?
Oh God. You know, it's funny. I was just last night, I was looking at all of those, you know, because my focus is UNESCO World Heritage Sites.
Love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, cool. So I'm trying to hit all of them before I die. So we got it. So I can't die till I'm like 120. So I got it covered.
Well, that's good.
But
that's cool. A lot of vitamins.
You got to go to Tucson. Exactly. You got to go to Tucson. Tucson is the gastronomical capital of the world, and that's a UNESCO site. Well, you know.
Tucson. I've been to. Let me see. I've been to Giant's Causeway in Ireland, which I only just yesterday I had plaque in my photo gallery that it said World Heritage Site. And I went, oh God, I didn't even know that. I remember taking the picture.
And you've been there. So check
and
it.
I've been there. So I'm like, cool. That's one off the list. And so, you know, I've been to England and I used to live in France. And, you know, I mean, I've got so many locations I want to go to, but it's just a question of time. You know, how long can you be gone within reason, you know?
Full time.
Well, if I didn't have two dogs and cats, I would do that. But
well, call us. Call us. We'll take care of them.
But this is doing
the UNESCO World Heritage Sites is a really big deal. And there's the biospheres, there's the natural, you know, all of them. Oh. But I mean, you're talking some. It's important.
How many are there?
Oh,
what was that?
How many
are there?
Oh, there's I want to say 1100 and I don't know 52 or something.
You gotta
like
get
that.
Moving, dude.
You got I know. I mean, how many years is that? It's a lot.
Do as many as you can. Many as you can, because some you want to stay longer. I mean, our whole tour started in 2012. Mm. It was getting close to the centennial of the national park system. So we said there was 397 parks when we started. And because Ken Burns did the whole thing of America's best idea, and so we called it the Spirit of America tour, because it told actually 3/4 of the parks are historical, more than natural wonders like, you know, the Sequoias and Yosemite and Yellowstone. They're historical. Mm. And so we said, well, it's the Spirit of America tour. Then that terminology got a little political, and we didn't want to go down the political drama route, because parks are for everyone. And I don't, other than us bringing our wine, it shouldn't be a party unless other people bring their wine too. So we didn't want to, you know, all that.
Right.
So we changed it to the Love Your Parks tour, because we also realized every park matters. And so now we're like, I think of 500 plus in of everything from a pocket park to a national park to a forest to a wildlife refuge to national landmarks, natural landmarks, historic sites. I mean, you name it. And so you just eventually kind of go, that's what you do, and you wear it every day. That's why we have nurses' scrubs. But you wear it. And now I'm going to get emails about nurses going, we need our scrubs, we're overworked. And you are, you know, but that's the thing. It's eventually it just becomes what you do every day, you know, if you're that focused on. But the UNESCO things are important, I think, because we can lose those sites.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was just reading that Venice might lose their standing, I guess, because it was over-touristy. What do you call it?
Yeah, overcrowded and
Yeah. And, you know, that's sad, because that's on my list, of course. You know, when I lived in France, I went to a lot of places over there. I mean, I just went and saw the Van Gogh, immersive, and that was fabulous. And, I thought, man, when I was in Arles, I didn't even, you know, I had lunch in the Van Gogh cafe, and, I didn't really appreciate that until now.
Now you're like, I could go back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we all learn as we travel. Those layers of knowledge and, you know, experience come in. And while you're there, you're appreciating something else. You know, maybe it's the food. Did you find his ear? No.
Wasn't looking for that. No.
But
it's alive and living in Mike Tyson's mouth.
Oh, stop.
Oh. Wow.
This is totally sorry, Eftwad. We went off the rails.
Sorry.
But that's what travel does. Travel is about those experiences and learning and going, oh, you know, and you can't. And now it's also, you know, changed over. We have the internet now that is really showing us stuff that we didn't have years ago. But part of what you're talking about really brings home to the power of photography. When you know, you're talking about going, you know, to places like Venice, right? Venice is also in trouble for flooding. I mean, this is a big deal when you look at climate change. And so a lot of political issues, climate change are affecting the way we travel. COVID affects how we travel. So when you get to a place, go to town, get it all. But because, you know, they're looking at like parks now, you have to make reservations to get into this place because of the footprint. And that's okay. So we have to know about it, plan for it, and understand this is a special thing once you get in. I think it brings the value back. But a lot of people won't get to the places that you may get to. So the power of your photography is that people and videos, you know, being there, having a video experience, all the experiences that we have with multimedia now digitally means people can cost effectively travel and have an appreciation for a place if they can't get there. So I think that's the beauty of, and we want to entice people to go there as part of our job, but for those who can't.
At least they know about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they'll pass it on to other people too. So do you feel that, you started photography when you were a kid.
Yeah, I did. I was the family voyeur, much to my dad's chagrin. But all my life it was like, you know, Kathleen, people don't like independent women. So you need to pick a career.
Called IndieSpirit.live. Right? Live or lived? Is it? Do you want to say live or live? Is it IndieSpirit?
It's live.
So let's see. Live. You should be a teacher or a nurse.
Yeah, or a secretary.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, in a military family, they're mostly concerned about graduating high school, getting married, and having babies. And that so wasn't me. I'm like, ew, why? I mean, and I have two boys, and I love them to death. But you know, I'm not that way. I'm a good mom, I think. Although they may differ, but.
Oh, but they buy you t-shirts with cool sayings. So
you must be,
you know,
yeah.
Everything is the parents' fault anyway, but,
yeah, of course.
I'm not saying anything.
Don't you dare. I'm sitting right here.
But yeah, no, that wasn't for me. And I mean, I had two friends that joined the military, girls, they joined the Navy. And my mom said, you're not going to join the Navy because my parents were both Army. You're not joining the Navy. And I'm like, why?
Oh,
if I can't join the Navy, then why? I'm not going to do anything. So I went off on my own and, you know, did marry and have children, but, you know, I did it on my own terms. So, you know, I think that it's important. And the reason the military thing is for the travel. That was my whole thing, you know, because my mom and dad met in North Africa. They got married in Naples. Wow. And then they lived in the Azores for a while. And
wow.
Then came back. And I was born in Germany, of course. That whole thing was like, holy cow.
Yeah.
I would so love to do that. You know, just travel the world and experience other cultures.
Isn't that the Army? Or one time, I believe it was the Army. It was join the Army and see the world. Wasn't that their motto?
Yeah. Yeah,
so that was their kind of join the Army and we'll take you a whole bunch of places. They'll really tell you what it's going to be like when you get there. But
But
I think being in the military too, military travel, you do really connect with the cultures that on the ground. I mean, we look at this whole Afghanistan thing. I'm not going to get political about it, but they did build up places. They built water tanks. They build, you know, they built the infrastructure for communities.
Right.
So you're on the ground one-on-one with people, you know, so it is like, there's all different forms of travel and tourism. You know, military is one, pet sitting is one, people are house swapping or whatever. Yeah. And then there's hotels and restaurants and Airbnbs. Huh? I mean, this, to me, it's about connecting with people. For you, I mean, are you like, when you do the UNESCO heritage sites, is it about the destination and then looking at the history what is it for you about the UNESCO sites?
For me, it's about the history of it. You know, I mean, I was in North Carolina in June and never been to North Carolina. And I went to a place called Bennett Place and they have this little house on this property And it's a beautiful property. I mean, it's green and lush and gorgeous.
It really, I know when you come from Albuquerque, when you go from the desert to the green of North Carolina, it's like you just want to roll in the grass.
Oh, I know. I wanted to take off my shoes and just walk in the grass.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I was at Bennett Place, and that was actually my Travel Tuesday photo today on Indie Spirit on my Instagram. And this little house is where the generals sat down and hammered out the agreement to end the Civil War.
Wow.
And awesome. I thought, holy cow. I mean,
doesn't that make it real to you? Like the history becomes real.
Yeah, it does, like because you can, you know, if you close your eyes for a sec, you can feel it. You really, I mean, and I know that sounds a little woo woo to some people.
No, it's real.
You can feel the history. You can feel who was there, you know, and that's how I felt when I lived in France. You know, I mean, my apartment was a servant's quarters on the fourth floor of a building that used to be a hotel in the 1600s.
Wow.
And right across the street was the opera. At opera every Sunday. I just had to open my windows.
Cool.
Whether you liked it or not.
Exactly.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. So anyway, for me, that's how it feels to me when I go there. And I photograph buildings. When I was in grad school, they always said you have to pick a genre. And I'm like, I don't want to pick a genre.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we're the blend, so welcome.
Yeah. So, I photograph buildings, I photograph scenery, I photograph
flowers,
and I photograph, oh my God, I'm such a wildlife advocate.
That's what I wanted to ask you about that. I was reading that you're into conservation. Tell us a bit about that. I mean, what, you know, and by the way, you've got cool cats, man. They're totally playing behind you. It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah.
Boy, they go after one another. You can't believe it. And my senior cat, she's the one, she doesn't want to have any of it. But this one, he's new. He's like 3 years old. And he's
a baby still.
As a military family, did you have animals? Did you go see animals in the wild, or what started it?
We never had animals growing up. So, and that's probably why I have so many now, because, you know, I didn't get to have them when I was a kid.
The cats are but,
I know he's complaining because she won't play with him.
Everyone, this is why you should watch the videos on Zoom, our Zoom videos on YouTube or Facebook, because then you'll see the kittens that you're hearing the sounds from.
Yes.
Kitty, kitty, kitty.
But anyway, so to get back to the advocate thing, when I go somewhere, one of the things I always do is that if there's a zoo, I'm there. That's it, you know. If there's a wildlife sanctuary, I'm there. You know, I prefer the sanctuaries, but you know,
yeah.
I mean, and zoos are just trying to help to increase the population of endangered species and that type of thing. At least that's my take on it. You know,
it depends on the zoo.
Yeah,
every place is different.
I think that in the last 10 years has become a way for zoos to survive. And I don't believe they were like that before, but they are definitely changing over to that, which is a decent thing to do. As long as they're not breeding, and putting animals into cages.
There's a lot of animals that are bred there and put down that people don't see. But that just depends on each zoo. So everyone is different.
Exactly.
There's an education component that is cool for kids and for people. But I see a lot of them moving because towards being more of a rescue. There's a lot of rescues attached, which I think is great. If they can get their vets to help rescue animals local. So there's that. But in the sanctuaries, I mean, there's a global wildlife sanctuary association. So if you want to know,
oh, that's a good thing.
That's a really good thing for people to Google before they go to, because in certain places, mm-hmm. If everyone's seen, I think it's Bloody Lions. There's places that call themselves sanctuaries and then are breeding houses for canned hunting. So in South Africa with lions and all of that, it's terrible. So you've got to look them up before you go.
Yeah,
absolutely. And if you find a bad one, yell and make a ruckus about it. Yeah. You know, not yell at them necessarily, but you know, use social media, use your writing, your photography, or you know, to let people know aware of it. I'd be aware of some of that stuff because people don't know. People go and volunteer at those fake sanctuaries, and they don't know. They're like, "Look, I'm helping this baby; it's orphaned." No, it's not. So it's a scam. Mm-hmm. It's a big scam, but. Yeah. Yeah. So the conservation, I love that you have that idea. Do you go to parks and preserves, like you're talking about sanctuaries?
I do, because, and that's the other thing, I love being in nature. Of course, being as fair as I am, I have to slather on 200, whatever it is, SPF or something, you know, for my skin. But, you know, I love being outside and being able to experience the wildlife, the trees, the flowers, you know, whatever, the landscape in general. So, you know, it's just,
but you're in a beautiful area for that too. You've got the is it the Bosque? How do you pronounce it? Bosque down south.
When I moved here, I went, that's not how you say that. It's and Bosque. Everybody said, that's how they say it here.
Yeah. Bosque. I can't pronounce anything. The more you travel, the worse you get, actually.
Right? I know. It was so funny. When I lived in France, I would
be in trouble.
I would go to the deli or whatever, and I would make my order. And then there'd be somebody standing behind me from Texas or wherever, somewhere in the South, you know, and they'd be murdering the French language. And I was like, you know, nails on a chalkboard. So,
that would be me.
You know, and it's funny because you go somewhere and you at least try to speak the language, you know, they appreciate the attempt. So don't let, you know, how you sound stop you.
Yeah. Because it's part of the conversation. It's a part of connecting is learning everybody's language and it's funny to them. Yeah.
It's also a sign of respect.
Right, right. You know? I mean, when I was in Shanghai, the only word I knew was thank you, you know, so that was it. And they appreciated that I used that word, even though I was dumb American. So
it's a sign of respect. And
so,
it takes time to learn a different language, and especially depending on the length of time you're going to be somewhere. Yeah, and it does help. You get around if you can learn some of the phrases that you'll want to know, and you can easily now on the internet. There's all kinds of programs that are free to inexpensive, like Babbel. Babbel does that. You know,
Babbel.
Nice name.
Babbel.
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 I like it. But I mean, if you really want to know how to say something, you can go to your computer and actually hear it.
Yeah,
which is amazing.
Yeah, I'm trying to teach myself Italian, and it's funny because the way I'm doing it, well, I use Babbel, coincidentally, but I also listen to Andrea Bocelli and see if I can understand what he's saying. And I was like,
oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
Because when there's rhythm and lyric, there's a flow.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really smart.
And that's how they teach kids foreign languages in school, you know, with rhythms and music and art, you know, which makes it so sad that those programs are going away in schools. But I mean, that's the best way to learn, boy, because if you learn that word in a song or from a TV show or whatever, you're never going to forget it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. Mm-hmm. So where are you going next?
Let's see. I am actually going to Phoenix on Sunday, or Scottsdale. So it's kind of a personal trip, but I'm going to throw in some work in there too. I'm going to go to Taliesin West, which is a UNESCO site. And
where's that?
It's Frank Lloyd Wright. It's his West Coast school.
Oh.
And I've been there before, but I didn't really, again, didn't appreciate it because I'm like, this is kind of boring. But then I read about Frank Lloyd Wright and I'm like, okay, I want to go back there now. So, you know,
I mean,
I love his architecture. I do. And of course, mm-hmm. Falling Water is my favorite, but, you know, Taliesin West is in the middle of Arizona. Mm-hmm. I mean, how cool is that? And it's built into the landscape. So
that's cool.
Yeah. So, doing that, and then I'm going to Puerto Vallarta next month.
Nice.
So provided, you know, they don't shut down. So I had a trip to Belize scheduled last year, but twice. And it got
right.
Times.
It's called a detour.
Yeah.
Detour.
So in Puerto Vallarta, there's several UNESCO sites. So I can check off like four, I think, from Puerto Vallarta.
She's going to be busy.
I am. Mm-hmm.
And there's margaritas there, just in case you missed the margaritas.
There's margaritas.
Your area.
Yeah.
You know.
You can't go somewhere like that and not have margaritas, right?
No.
Yeah. Well, IFTO is having their conference in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is our next destination. We'll be in Asheville when this airs, but we're going to go back there just for a couple days. But are you going to be able to make it to that? November.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not. I have to be back in San Francisco in November. I was just there.
Oh, that's sad.
July. Yeah, I know. Poor me.
Yeah. Boo-hoo.
But I want to go back to the Presidio and cover the restaurants that were closed when I was there. And
the Presidio, I mean, that's a national park unit, and it's such a unique place because there's so many, I mean, there's galleries, museums, and people are living there in the old officers' quarters kind of thing. Then there's the El Polin or El Pol, it's part of the Juan Bautista de Anza National Historic Heritage Trail. And I'm a sucker for that. Like the whole trail goes from Mexico south of Tucson all the way up. And that's how Presidio in San Francisco was founded by Juan Bautista for New Spain. And there's a garden that they planted. And we were there when they had an event. Nancy, you got to make tortillas. You made tortillas. Uh-huh. You ground the corn, made
so
tortillas. And they were doing an it was like an Afro-Hispanic heritage event because part of the trail showcases the history in Mexico and south of Mexico, the Afro-Latino history. And a lot of people don't know about that. And I mean, people have picked arguments over. I'm like, no. You know.
Well, when I was there, they were doing a dig, an archaeological dig.
Cool.
Building.
Yeah.
That's another reason I want to go back because I want to pick the brain of the guy who's doing the dig. You know, and he was busy that day, so I couldn't do it. But yeah, I mean, it's really fun. I love what I do. I really do love it. I mean, not just for the writing, but for the photography, you know. I never really thought about travel photography until I started travel writing. You know what I mean?
It changes your view, like when you're photographing. It's so interesting, even just, you know, with what we do. Nancy's like, okay, I need this for the videos because she does the videos. I'll do the photography and filming. And then all of a sudden, okay, now we're doing digital magazines. So we went from print where make sure you have vertical, horizontal. Okay, now it's web. We don't need a vertical. Who puts a vertical photo really half of the time?
But
it's always horizontal or square for Instagram. And, you know, it's like, you know, so you've got like footage from this era of non this to suddenly, damn, I wish I took this, you know, why are you know? So now it's
take
like
it
everywhere
all.
We go,
take it all.
I have to look at it from multiple angles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think travel writing really, because you never know, like COVID, I think, taught us all as writers and travelers, and you know, especially if you're stuck in one place. Oh, well, let me revisit what I was going to do. And when I would just do one article covering 20 things in one place, suddenly, wait, I got 10 articles. that I can write and refeature. And then as you go through it, you go, if I'd only taken that one extra shot.
Exactly.
Well, you know what? A good habit that they always taught us when I was in grad school is whatever you're taking a picture of, take it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And always, always, always turn around to see what you just passed.
Exactly. Always. That's a hike. I love hikes where you go back because you're going to, mm-hmm. the lighting changes, the view changes, you know, take it both ways and always leave room to crop.
Yes.
Exactly.
Don't overcrop your photo from the beginning. And it won't work for Instagram if you do.
And, well, and, you know what? There's a cool thing for Instagram that I use. If you look at my Indie Spirit Live, well, either of my feed on Instagram, I have a black border around my images, and that's called square ready. Mm-hmm. And so that black border makes Instagram square. It makes it square, but it gives you the entire image.
Well, that's cool. So you can.
So that's because that bugs.
That's me. A cool tip for folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It bugs me to death that Instagram crops my image, and and of course, since I have no control issues, then.
I love this conversation. This is fun.
One of the things I have to say from when I'm putting together an article with photos, a photo essay, one of the things that really drives me crazy about
she's a layoff photos, person. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The photos is where somebody will do everything, the object or the most important object of the photo dead center.
Oh, that makes me crazy too.
Yeah.
Do not look at me when you say that.
I'm looking up. But no, because that's not really good composition. It's boring.
But that's done because of Instagram. Instagram did it. Instagram's
fault. Then you have to crop your own things before you upload them to Instagram so they don't do that to you. Because it's really bad. It's really bad composition.
Well, what I've seen is a lot of people will take use their phone for photos, and then they'll do stuff on Instagram, it changes whatever through whatever app, and they don't have the original. And so they turn in fixed photos instead of the original. So you can't, it's kind of messed up for their publisher. Yeah.
You shouldn't from the publisher and original image for anything that stays in your library.
Yeah, and don't touch it. Like, just let it be. Because again, you never know. I think COVID taught a lot of us that, you know, one image can tell 10 stories.
Oh yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that drives me nuts, and then I promise I'll stop complaining about that, is crooked horizon lines.
Oh, don't even.
Don't.
Oh my God. It makes me nuts.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, how much did you have to drink?
I don't do cell phone photography very well because my cell phone has all kinds of layering and protection on it because I tend to drop it in, you know, swamps, toilets, dirt, everything. So I can't really, you're supposed to have it clean enough for your lens and it's done. But do cell phone, because I don't do enough of that, like really for publishing stuff.
There again,
do they have like a horizon line thing on it to help people, like autofocus?
No, I mean you can get an app that has a grid on it that
so you
does
can
that.
Straighten it. Yeah,
but you know, see, to me, that's just a crutch. You know, and if you pay attention to your composition, you gotta straighten the horizon line.
Because those crutches don't understand the wave will change this.
No, but then
nature's not square.
Don't put the horizon line exactly halfway through the photo either.
Right. Yeah.
Do not photograph the Statue of Liberty with the statue in the middle and the horizon line in the middle of the
So
do not do
the horizon.
So this has become a travel writing photography interview of what not to do.
Right.
Do buy nurses scrubs, but don't buy them out. Don't.
Yeah.
They're changing their style and don't leave the old ones for us.
Yes.
But this is really good. It's important stuff. I mean, really about, because, you know, society and audiences are either more audio and visual than ever, right? So there's travel writing. People want to learn a little bit and then click on a link. Do I want to go? Do I book? Do I do? So there's travel writing has become very much have some feeling and texture to your what you're writing, but put some substance and don't go on for 10 years. Right. You know, it's really, and they want it personalized too. So it's like, here's your paragraph, move on almost, right? Or have your lists. Lists are a big deal. You do a lot of those too. But the visual is crucial, I think.
It is absolutely crucial.
The visual these days for travel writers and social media. I mean, if you're going to work with the CVB or DMO, a destination marketing organization for those starting, they want to see you post things on social media. Mm-hmm. And they want things now.
Yep.
And there's an importance to that too. You know, we're a magazine. I'll sometimes a story will come out a year later, depending, but they have their radio, they'll have all these things, but depending on the story could be a while, but all these things need to happen in the meantime, social media being one. Right now, one of our destinations is on fire. One of our destinations was just in a hurricane. You know, one of our destinations got closed down for COVID. So you have to know that the importance of now, when you're in a destination, it'll be midnight. I'll sit there because I don't do all the phone quick stuff. And you're normally on a media tour hauling or elbowing other photographers out of your way. If you're doing a group media visit, it's like, don't you shine your flashlight over my food. This is mine. Light over that. Do not use the flash on my stuff. But there's a thing, I would stay up late at night just to get those images out of what things look like now, because tomorrow could change. And I'm not trying to be fatalist or, you know, but it is really happening. You don't know what's going to close down. You don't. And right now, everything is topsy-turvy. So get out what you can get out now.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I write a lot for Spotted by Locals in San Francisco because I still have a place, a house there. And
do you need a pet sitter there too?
No, my pets live here.
Okay. I can house sit. I just love San Francisco. But sorry, carry on.
That's okay. I love writing for them because their word count limit is 250 words.
Nancy's dream.
You can't believe how hard it is to
it is hard.
About a destination in 250 words.
But it feels good once you've done it. It's like even I think social media, that is one of these positives. Social media teaches us to put something out better.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you know, and it really, a person who's reading the article, depending on who they are and what their interest is, they're only going to last so long. So when you think of what you've been talking of good writing, you always put the best at the top. Mm-hmm. So people kind of know that, and it's going to dissipate and dissipate and dissipate. So the longer the article, the more, by the time you get to the third or fourth page, you're dropping readers. If you're looking at the purpose of the article, okay, not just I like to write, the purpose of the article, then it's a little bit easier to make sure that you're on point throughout the article, so the article doesn't fade away.
Right.
And become like less interesting towards the close than it is at the opening. And then you have to understand that the reader can only be on a high so long.
Right. I was just a couple of days ago that you have like 3 seconds to gain someone's interest.
Oh yeah.
On the internet. Mm-hmm. I'm like 3 seconds. I mean, that's like 1, 2, 3, you're done.
That's a scary thing because people are also that's politically reading headlines and going, I know the story.
No, you don't.
And people are I speed read. I'm good at that. I have to be, and I am retaining it, but I'll go back to something if I really have to ingest. There's a speed read. I'm looking for this. And I think a lot of people are doing that. It's not necessarily good, but it's I'm a trained speed reader. I really am. I can speed read, get the gist of it. And if I can't get the gist of it while I'm speed reading, then like,
you're out.
Yeah, go back. Because honestly, people do it. But if they're doing it, like I'm all in. And if you're not all in and it's like, oh, I'm just checking this out and I'm kind of glancing through speed, you know what I mean? That's not true speed reading, like just
right.
Then this is my podcast. More like, where's the gong?
Speed talking.
I've gotten myself out.
The thing is to keep the reader's interest and you don't know who the reader is. Mm-hmm. You really don't. You haven't met them, so you don't know who they are. But they clicked on the article because of the title. So the title is ultra, ultra important. And when you start, that first paragraph has to be the very best. And the second one has to be the very best to get to the third one, which has to be the very best to get to the fourth one. So it's kind of like
SEO that. Works that way, doesn't
and,
it?
Pretty much. And you really, if you can't keep the tempo up, maybe like Lisa, you said earlier, sometimes one article should have been three or four articles.
Or
don't
10.
Try to like don't put a whole country in one article.
Yeah,
you really
write a guidebook.
Yeah,
right. That's a great idea.
Yeah, honestly, so, you can do it. You know, there's digital media now. It's like or do a series. And I think that's something too that, you know, we've been doing this. I'm getting younger, but, you know, we've been doing this since.
Well, you have to show us that.
The two of us combined were like 60, 70 years of experience between the two of us. And it's maybe 80. Oh, God. Yeah.
Hey, just tone it down, okay?
I know. But,
he's
but.
He's like, shut up already.
I know. But. Really? But the thing is, the rules haven't really changed in people other than it's sped up.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So a book, like the same thing as a book, the rules are still there. But when someone purchases a book, they already are invested. I mean, they're spending money on a book, whether it's Kindle, audio, whatever, they're invested in that. Mm-hmm. And so the rest of it, you can have the great intro, the first paragraph good. If the second paragraph is bad, they are not going to be happy. Mm-hmm. And now this is what's changed. We have review sites everywhere. So, you know, so it to me, it's
a craft. Yeah. And you have to look at every single word as is this the best word? Is it?
Exactly.
And if you get the best words, and if you've got the best words, then you've got the best article.
And don't use the same words for everything.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That's something we see too, is a lot of people are using the same words in all their articles. And eventually you become known as that person. And then every time you read it, you want to strangle them. Like, don't, you know, I don't really want to, but you know what I mean? It's like, that's another thing is, I don't know. So this has become a conversation of what not to do.
Yeah.
And right now I'm going to go delete the article I've been writing.
Photography.
I'm going to delete half of my footage. I'm going to delete half of my articles. No, but it, you know this. But what not to do can save people so much time.
Yes,
really, it's really about, you know. So let's do what to do. What is one tip you can pass on that isn't a don't do this, do this for photography or writing?
Well, for photography, I would say make sure your composition is interesting. You know, there's no such thing as not post-processing your images these days. So, you know, do the best you can in post-processing because you want to put your best foot forward in photography and in writing. Now, for me, what to do, I write kind of the way I talk. So I inject humor into my articles, or at least I try, unless I'm bugged about something, then I just kind of rant for a minute. But but I try to inject humor because I think that keeps the reader engaged.
Yeah.
you know, that's just kind of how I
go with who you are. Be who you are.
Yeah, be who you are. Because if you try to be somebody you're not, it's never going to work.
Yeah, you can't see Nancy and I walking through a swamp in high heel shoes and try to pull it off.
Yeah. Right.
Well, actually, it'd be funny. I mean, I'd do it for. I would try it just for a joke.
No.
You know, or a dare.
No.
You know,
she's going no.
No.
Not walking through a swamp barefoot. Nope.
No. I would rather go through a swamp barefoot than in high heels.
No, the high heel thing. No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'd go barefoot.
A story that just popped into my mind when you're talking about swamps, not a swamp, but the Atlantic Ocean. When I was in Ireland, I went to the Wild Atlantic Way and we were on this trail to get to this beach on Skirkin Island. And, you know, in Ireland, it's got shale everywhere. That's stone and it's pointy and sharp and you trip over stuff. And I'm not necessarily the most coordinated person ever, but I had my gear. I had two camera bodies, my lenses and my camera bag. And I don't know what else I was
going to
do. Anyway, too much stuff, right? So I'm walking along and I trip over a piece of shale. I land in a tide pool with all of my equipment. I had waterproof pants on though. So that was good.
because those are not nurses scrubs, but they're almost waterproof ish.
And so, but the gal behind me, you know, just to show you who's important here in this scenario, she goes, "Oh my God, Kathleen, your cameras."
Yeah. Well,
it's like, don't, you know, worry about me. Just get my gear.
But that's,
you know, it's like walking through the swamp in high heels. You wouldn't walk through. I mean, it was kind of a no brainer, but I didn't think about that. I just had all my gear with me and I was going to take pictures.
I don't travel. Well, we've paired way down being on the road full time. You know, and still though, I have to say we've got tourism brochures at the bottom, lining the bottom of the car. So if you break into my car, you're going to steal visitor guides. Good for you. Right?
Right.
Good. Hope you have a nice travel, but don't break into anybody else's cars. But like, that's it. It's like you just kind of get to this point of everybody's different though. Some people are traveling with fashion in mind and doing the high heels and doing, you know, everybody's different. There's some people are doing resorts and luxury and everybody's got a different thing. And that's the beauty of travel. There's a place for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There really is.
Yeah.
But no matter what we do, there's always something in travel that will like push us
to the next,
a different place and a different level of, I didn't really want, you know, out of the comfort zone, and we'll learn something we never thought we wanted to know about.
Yeah. Yeah. See, and I think that's why I travel I don't travel necessarily with a lot of clothes, but I do travel with a lot of gear.
I beg your pardon.
I mean, what's important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and that's why I do, because I don't really care, you know, if I'm wearing yoga pants or a t-shirt or, you know, sunscreen, or, you know, I don't care if my hair is messy or whatever. But because to me, it's about learning about the people, the food, the culture, the natural element, you know, the wildlife, all of that. You can't do that if you're wearing, you know, high heels and, you know, stuff like that.
I don't know the last time I wore high heels. I don't.
Me either.
I can't do it. But, you know, some can. So, you know, kudos to you, because we need you to do that, because the rest of us, you know, who can't, don't. I don't think there's many of us. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that. But I do respect those who can walk elegantly in down high heels. That's a skill. That is a skill. And I appreciate it. And hell no, I'll fall down. I'm in the swamp though, you know. I will. I mean, I'm in the swamp. I know how to do that, but even still, I could fall down and get hurt, you know? So,
yeah.
And I mean,
when I worked for the government, I used to wear heels every day and it was like,
today,
I'm like 2 seconds and I'm done.
No, that's, I don't even know. My feet have almost gone into boot mode. Like I have boot feet. Yeah. Boot feet.
Okay.
Well, on that note, thank you for joining us, Kathleen. This has been fun. I don't think it's what any of us expected, a conversation, but it's been super fun and informative, about photography, travel, all of that. And so, listen, wonderful, safe travels on your next adventures.
Thank you.
And also getting through all those UNESCO World Heritage Sites.
Oh,
my gosh.
I wish you luck on that. That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I love
it. Thank you. My ultimate goal is to write a book about it, you know.
Cool.
But, like a photo essay book.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Nice.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I my goal is to be the next Peter Lick. Well,
okay.
Hey, you never know. But be who you are. I think you are. That's it. Because everyone, again, to go with that, it's indiespirit.live to keep up with Kathleen's travels and also for her photography and blog. Go to kathleenmesmer.com. That's M-E-S-S-M-E-R, kathleenmesmer.com. The International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association, again, awesome organization of the creatives, the travelers, the photographers, and also the destinations themselves, also tour guide services. So if you're in anything, if you do anything in the food, wine, travel industry, you got to connect there. And also their social media rocks. I love following them on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You go around the world following them. Mm. So go to their website. It's ifwtwa.org. Their conference is coming up in November in St. Petersburg, really early November. So they're also welcoming non-members. So that's a great way to get out there and network and learn more about the organization. And St. Petersburg, Florida is beautiful. We know it's awesome. So check it out. And of course, keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Every second Tuesday, every second Friday is dedicated to the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association and their awesome members like Kathleen. So thank you all for joining us. Take care.
Okay.
And do not behave.
No.
There's no fun in that.